Okay, so you're going to get a kick out of this one. This episode is, I believe, one of the best Geek Speak episodes. Now, I want you to strap in for this one because it's a little longer than the usual podcast that we usually have, but it's for a reason. It's because we have on Mr. Lon Langston. Now, Lon Langston is an executive coach. And one thing that you guys are going to want to hear, especially if you're in marketing, especially if you're an entrepreneur, especially if you're getting started in business, or even if you've been in business for a long time, Lon grew his company to $21 million in revenue and sold it, negotiated its sale 11 years later. He's going to talk a little bit about the ups and downs, the myths of entrepreneurship. He's going to give us some books and some podcasts that we need to listen to. He's also going to share with us some marketing tactics that he used back in 2004, which may still be relevant today. And then he's also going to talk about what marketing tools he's using right now for his coaching business. This is a jam-packed episode. I cannot wait for you guys to listen to this episode. Look, you're going to be laughing right off the bat because Lon, well, anyway, I'm just going to let you listen. Tune in right now.
You are the biggest celebrity that I've had.
I don't think that says much for your show.
Oh my god! This is great, man. I'm telling you, I'm trending up. I'm trending up. You are the biggest celebrity. So, yeah.
Can I get a recording of you saying that?
It's probably already captured already. Oh, man. Yeah, you could use that sound bite. Okay, so we are live. This is Geek Speak, episode 12, and we have a special guest on today, and his name is Mr. Lon Langston. And so, Lon, how has your week been so far? How's things going?
It's been good. It's been really good. I mean, you know, I get to interact with interesting people, and one of which this morning, so it's going well.
Okay. So you said this morning, I don't want to get too far down the road, but I guess we'll...
That was an executive coaching session, so okay. we'll talk more about that, but,
okay.
You know.
Okay, well, yeah, and that just ties into exactly what we're going to be talking about today, because on today's episode, Lon is an executive coach, and as a matter of fact, let me just read your bio.
Okay.
That just makes it easy so that everybody knows what you do and who you are.
Okay.
So, Lon is a graduate of the University of Georgia. In 1998, he began his career in the fast-paced, high-pressure wholesale produce industry as a sales rep and spent 16 years in management at organizations of all sizes, from small businesses to multi-billion dollar corporations. That's huge. He then began his own company in 2004, and grew it to $21 million in revenue, shipping 1.2 million pounds of produce per week with 64 employees before successfully negotiating its sale in its 11th year. We're going to dive into that. We're really going to dive into it because I'm interested to hear more about this. So Lon has been deeply involved in the community, serving as the 2015 chairman of the Clayton County Chamber of Commerce, a board member of the Atlanta Aerotropolis Alliance, and a steering committee member of the Clayton County Economic Strategic Plan, president of the Atlanta Produce Dealers Association, and as a member of the Clayton State University's Foundation Board of Advisors and College of Business Board of Advisors. Most recently, Lon has been working as an executive coach, corporate trainer, and consultant, and is the executive in residence at Clayton State's University of Business. Lon's broad knowledge and business experience will be a great asset to companies around. And Lon was born in Atlanta. I'll let you guys know this now. Born and raised in Atlanta. That's rare.
That's rare for a lot of people. Now. One of the few.
Yeah. Not many people are actually born in Atlanta, so that's great. And lived in the metro area for the majority of his life. Lon and his wife have lived and worked in Clayton County and Henry counties for their entire careers. They've attended Community Bible Church, where Lon served as the elder board member, head greeter, and class leader. He enjoys running and reading. Lon always talks about running and reading, and we're gonna dive into that a little bit too. And on his business experience and this new opportunity, Lon started Lon has spent a lot of years in the trenches. I know firsthand the challenges and triumphs of starting, growing, and selling a business. Now, I value a positive impact on as many people as I can and think helping business people thrive is a great way to do that. As Vice President of Business Development, Lon will assist businesses in developing a strong foundation while encouraging growth. Woo! Lon. That's a mouthful.
So I need to make one clarification.
Okay.
Because
okay.
It's important.
Yes.
Even though I'm wearing a red sweater, I did not go to the University of Georgia.
Okay.
It's West Georgia.
West Georgia.
Not UGA. And I really have to say that because I have a daughter at Georgia Tech. So she would not like me saying University of Georgia. So.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you said West Georgia because there's a tie-in.
Mm-hmm.
My sister actually graduated from the University of West Georgia.
Cool, yeah.
So there's another alum for you, and she loved the college, so, you know, it's a great college. Well, Lon, all of your accomplishments, all the things that you've been doing and that you're still doing, I mean, that's a lot of stuff. That's a lot. I mean, that is a ton. So the first question, though, I had for you was, in your bio, it mentioned that you grew your company to over $21 million. Mm-hmm. How in the heck did you do that? I mean, I'm interested to know.
Okay, so it was incredibly difficult. That is not an easy thing to do. But the beginning of growing a company to that size is having the intention to grow it to that size. But I want to say this, that's revenue. That's not profit. You know, there were negative profit years. I mean, you might say, oh, I got a $20 million company. And you hear people say that all the time. I got a so-and-so million-dollar company. That doesn't mean they're making any money because there were a lot of years I didn't make any money. And by the way, people need to know that if you're going to start and grow a business, that there are going to be times when it's extremely difficult. There are going to be times when it's scary, when you don't sleep at night.
Yeah.
All those things are true. All those things you hear, they're true because, I mean, there were years when I owed so much money that I didn't know there was any way I'd ever be able to repay it, right? And in the end, it worked out. But the end was 11 years down the road. The end, what, you know, when I started it, I was naively thought, like most business startups, that, oh, this thing's going to make money from the very beginning.
Right.
But you know, it was actually years before it got turned positive profit. And then it was years more before the debt got paid off, right? So, I mean, so that's one thing. You got to know that it's difficult. And if you want to do it, do it.
Right.
But it's incredibly difficult. Now, if you want to get to that size, you can't bootstrap it. You do have to go out and get investors. You have to get bank loans. But then you owe all those people money, right? Those investors and the banks. And every month you got to make payments. And every month you got to explain what you're doing.
Right.
Right. And so if you have an investor, for sure, then you might think you're the CEO of the company or the boss, but you have a boss because you have to explain to that person why you're not paying them back or why the company's not making money. And so if you want to get big, you're going to have to endure those things, and it takes a lot of intestinal fortitude. It takes a lot of just pushing through obstacles. But I want to circle back around to the point I was making earlier. That's not necessarily the best way to make money for yourself,
right?
So a small company, even as small as just yourself and a laptop, might make more money than a $21 million company, right? Now, there's a funny caveat. During the Great Recession, I was in the produce industry, the fresh produce industry, and it's disconnected from the larger economy. So while everybody else's business was going down, mine went up.
Wow.
It's not an inverse relationship. It's just disconnected. It was just coincidental. But one of my employees said, wow, we're we're making more money than General Motors. Which was true, because they were losing money.
Right. That's a sense of the time.
Right. But so that's just an illustration that the top line, General Motors with the billions of dollars, or my company was $21 million, or just a company that has $1 million in sales. The bottom line of each of those could be different, right? The smallest top line could have the largest bottom line.
That's right.
If you got a 50% profit margin and you're $1 million in sales, you're making $500,000 a year. In the produce industry, we had about a 2% margin in the years when we made money. So, you know, you had to get to $20 million to make anything.
So, I mean, it's amazing when you said that. There's something you said earlier where you're like, if you want to grow, and you want to grow your business, you may have to take out loans. Mm-hmm. You may have to take out loans. I mean, mm-hmm. if you want to grow it that mm-hmm. big, mm-hmm. you know, talk to a little bit about, okay, you mentioned it's scary. Mm-hmm. You know, you may not be you're the CEO, but you still have to answer to other people. You got employees you got to pay, mm-hmm. all this stuff like mm-hmm. that. I mean, talk to us a little bit about some of those times when it was kind of scary, and okay. And it was like, you know, what are we going to do? Because that's reality. You know, yeah. I think yeah. that's what people want to hear.
So I'm glad you mentioned making payroll, because that's the biggest. Well, that's one of the biggest expenses of any business, and it's the biggest responsibility of any leader of an organization, because taking care of those people who have committed to come to work for you is a big, big deal. And one of the things that I did, which I think made my company successful and I would highly recommend, is I hired the very best people I could find. I'd been in the industry for many, many years, and so I knew everybody in the industry. And so I went and handpicked the people who were the best guy at this, the best guy at that, the best woman at this, the best production manager, the best salesperson, the best accounting person. But you know what? The best people already have good jobs. Yeah. And so if you want to get the best people, you got to pay high salaries to get them, right? And so all my people were very highly paid, which made making payroll harder.
Right.
It eventually made our success guaranteed, right? Because if you have really high quality people, they're going to do the things that have to be done to make the company successful. But in the meantime, you've got to write that check every 2 weeks in order to keep them.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lincoln, what you asked about was one of the an example of one of the most difficult times. So I hired the best financial guy I'd ever worked with, a guy named Mike Blaine, and he set up the incredible systems for us. And I mean, we had accounting systems, financial systems, HR systems that were like a huge company, right? Even though we were just a startup, because Mike Blaine was so smart. Except for the first couple of years, we didn't make any money, which meant that our vendors, the guys we were buying stuff from, you know, we were buying potatoes and onions and other produce from all over the country and bringing it here to Atlanta.
Right.
Those guys wanted to be paid every week.
Right.
And so Mike was in charge of the vendor check run. And after a year, it was almost exactly a year, he came to me and he said, I can't take this stress anymore. Because what would happen was, we didn't have the money to pay them.
Right.
So the checks, he'd cut the checks to the vendors and they'd just pile up on his desk.
Wow.
Because he couldn't mail them because they wouldn't clear.
Right, yeah.
And so he was trying to figure out which one can I mail this weekend? Which one can I mail this weekend? And then they were calling him and asking him, why haven't you sent my money? And he had to get, and so he finally said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. It's just too much stress. So he went back to a corporate job. Okay.
Wow.
That was a terrible moment.
Wow, because
I'd come up on the sales side of the business. I didn't understand anything about the back office. I didn't understand anything about accounting and finance and cash flow.
Right.
But you know what? It turned out to be a great learning experience for me, because I couldn't then afford to hire somebody to replace him. We were losing money. And so I hired somebody to who was a very competent bookkeeper, high attention to detail. But then she was doing like the bottom 75% of the controller job, and I took on the top 25%, which by top 25%, I meant all the decision making. That means I had to decide which vendors to pay, and I had to answer the phone calls and tell them how much they were going to get and why they weren't going to get what they wanted.
Wow.
But
yeah.
You know what? That was a fantastic experience, because I built systems to pay vendors that I used until I sold the company, and it taught me the whole cash flow side of the business. It also taught me the balance sheet side of the business, right, which I had never known before. So it made it enforced upon me this education that I probably would not have sought out.
Right. So it forced you to take on responsibilities, like you're saying, that mm-hmm. you would have never. And in most businesses, that sometimes that's what happens, where you don't really have to take on that responsibility, so you leave it to somebody mm-hmm. else. And then if they're not responsible enough, then your company could be mm-hmm. you could be in real jeopardy. Yeah, yeah. So that was a blessing that happened. Mm-hmm, so you talked a little bit about the business side and the sales, and you know that you were kind of responsible for, and then taking on that financial side. You know, this is a marketing podcast, right? Mm-hmm. That has business tied into it. Like when during this time, what, you know, and you know, we talk about this as being back in 2004, right?
Yeah.
What type of marketing, you know, were you doing back there, if any, you know, or what type of things were you doing at, from a marketing perspective?
Not enough. I mean, if I had it to do over again, I would certainly do marketing better. I would hope that I would know Lincoln back then, and that he could do marketing for me, because I certainly was not doing it well. Now, I do have a marketing degree from West Georgia, but I mean that had been, you know, that years had passed, right? And I had all these other responsibilities. So what we did do to marketing wise that was successful was we were very intentional about the brand.
Right.
We made sure that the core values, that the mission and vision, that the culture was all very coherent, and the brand was extremely tightly packed, so that everybody who worked there understood what the brand was, and everybody in the industry knew what our brand was.
Right.
Right? And so they knew, if you want this product and you want this quality and you want this level of service, then you come to us, right? If you want to buy it, you know, cheaper or whatever, you go somewhere else, because we were a higher price but a higher quality kind of offering.
Right.
But we were, so maintaining the integrity of the brand was something we did right in terms of marketing. And then the other thing we did was trade shows. I mean,
okay.
We just did industry trade shows.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we would set up the booth, right? But the main thing really was, I mean, we do a nice PowerPoint deck or whatever, and some nice banners. But the main thing was, we sent our highest quality people to the trade shows. I mean, we didn't send like hourly workers.
Right.
I mean, we sent like six-figure salespeople to go man the booth, right?
Wow.
So that, I think that was a big deal in terms of marketing. And remember, this is all B2B, and it's kind of a small community of
right.
even nationwide
right.
of people who are in this industry. And so if you go to like four or five of the big trade shows, you're touching most everybody in the industry. And so that was really our main vehicle.
That's phenomenal, because you know, trade shows are still relevant today. I mean, you know, if you're looking at, you know, I know you have, there's digital strategies, you know, you got social media, you got mm-hmm. you got LinkedIn, you got all these other platforms, Google and all this stuff. But trade shows are actually critical today to a lot of businesses, especially, like you said, it was a small subset of people, because it's such a niche, mm-hmm. right? Niche type mm-hmm. B2B business.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you being in there with those people, that gives you that visibility that you need with those individuals now.
Right.
So I'm thinking here, like, if fast forward to today,
okay.
to 2018,
yeah.
and somebody is in the produce industry, or they're in another industry, you know, they could be in whatever business, you know, you guys might be listening to this, and you're in marketing, you're a small mom and pop, you may be in produce, you may be in IT, you may be whatever, right? And there are industry specific trade shows or conventions or whatever that you go to.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, and I know we talked about this a little bit earlier before we even started the podcast, that trade show strategy tied in with LinkedIn now, you know, do you think that, and LinkedIn wasn't really doing what it's doing now
right.
back then, you know,
right.
nobody really was even on LinkedIn like that, but nowadays, fast forward, you can really connect with those same individuals, not saying don't do the trade shows, but do the trade shows and then also tie in some sort of LinkedIn strategy. Do you think that would have been, that could be something?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not a social media marketing expert at all, but I do feel like kind of intuitively that LinkedIn is the main platform for B2B. I mean, it has a seriousness about it that's a little bit above Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or whatever. It feels more professional, and even I saw a couple of days ago somebody said, like, this admonishment. It was like, Facebook does not equal LinkedIn. Don't post your personal stuff here or whatever. Right. Well, so LinkedIn has this kind of reputation for being B2B, and so I do think that would have certainly, had it been in existence then, it would have certainly fit into my marketing. And because you're able to target so well, I mean, with all social marketing, that's the coolest thing, right? I mean, back in the day, you would buy a billboard and hope somebody saw it. But,
right.
But now you can target that billboard where it pops up on their computer screen. Yeah,
that's right.
So, I mean, I'm a fan of LinkedIn personally because, I mean, I like the aesthetic. I like how it feels and looks and the functionality. And I feel like because I've got a lot of business experience, if I like it, then probably other business people who I want to be my customers are there too.
Right. So you are in the same ecosystem that your customers are living in digitally, and you could reach out and talk to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such an age right now where you could do that type of stuff. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So I want to switch gears a little bit. So we talked about your business, you know, how you were able to, you know, generate $21 million, shipping over 1.2 million pounds of produce. Mm-hmm. And then you were able to sell that business, you know, 11 years later. Now you're doing executive coaching,
right.
And you have your executive coaching business. Tell us a little bit about that. How did that all come about? Okay. I mean, so from the time you sold your business, you know, and now you're going into executive coaching. And a second part to that is during the years when you were building your produce business, were you also doing that at the same time, or how did that all come about?
Okay. So, all my experiences up until I sold my produce company kind of led me to being an executive coach and kind of a medium-sized business consultant. There was a serendipitous moment when I was at University of West Georgia, which, by the way, it was so long ago that they called it West Georgia College. But in one of my first marketing classes, it was like one of these, you know, lower level classes with 150 people in a lecture hall. But it was taught by the dean of the College of Business, John Hunsucker, and he played us a cassette tape. That tells you when it was.
Yeah.
He played us a cassette tape of Tom Peters talking about the book In Search of Excellence, because the book In Search of Excellence had just come out the year before. And so when I heard Tom Peters talking about In Search of Excellence, and Tom Peters, if you've ever heard him talk, is so passionate in his delivery, I was like, man, I love this stuff. Well, that started me on this multi-decade quest to learn all I could learn about what I didn't even know necessarily what to call it back then. I mean, they called it management, and then later they started calling it leadership. But then I realized, you know, it's more than management and leadership, and I really think this thing called behavioral economics now captures it even better.
Right.
You kind of layer that on top of management and leadership. Okay, so it started with Tom Peters, and I'm thinking, whoa, I love what this guy's saying. I want to do those things that he's saying. And then when I got out of college, I worked for a really small company. And then I worked for a multi-billion-dollar company. And then I started my own company.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this broad range of experiences. Plus, the experiences with being involved with a lot of nonprofits. I was on several nonprofit boards, church and the chamber and different charity organizations. And so you start seeing, okay, how this organization runs this way and this organization runs
right,
this way. And,
right.
and you can do compare and contrast, right?
Right?
And so you start understanding, oh, wait a minute, the culture of the organization makes a big difference, right? And so when we say culture of the organization, what we're really talking about is like the personality of the organization, right? And so I started realizing that makes a huge difference. Okay, now I was still feeling this like this call to, I thought it was to do the things Tom Peters said, But I later realized it was like, no, no, you want to be Tom Peters. So about in 2007, I guess, some guys and I formed this group called the Christian Executive Group. And maybe unbeknownst to them, they were kind of my guinea pigs. I started doing the executive coaching with that group of guys, right? And we met every month for 7 years.
Wow.
And so I got a lot of experience working with those guys. And so I really started it before I sold the produce company. And another thing that fits into the story is I always wanted to be out of the produce business. And I never felt like that was my calling. That was just what I ended up in because of circumstances.
Right.
Primarily because I was a really bad student and because I was incredibly introverted and could not do an interview to save my life. So I kind of had to take the job that was available to me, which was kind of bad, you know. So that got me in the produce business.
Gotcha, yeah.
And so I always wanted out of it. So actually having my own company was really a plan to get out of the produce business. And so along the way, I'm planning to get out by building this company to sell. Plus, I'm also planning what am I going to do when I get out, which was the executive coaching and medium-sized business consulting, right? Because now all those people who run those size businesses,
right,
you know, say, you know, 20 million to 100 million in revenue or 20 to 200 employees, those were my friends. And right, those were my customers and those were my vendors. And so I had this intimate understanding of how to make those businesses work and not work. And I also realized, after talking to, I mean, probably hundreds over the years of business owners and senior managers in these size companies, that they tend to really understand how to do their specific thing, whatever it is. I mean, whether it's selling cars or selling potatoes, they really understand how to do that thing.
Right.
But they get to this point where the business gets so big that they don't really understand how to run a larger organization. And they say this one phrase, they say, I feel stuck. And when I hear somebody say, I feel stuck,
yeah,
I'm like, I can help you because yeah, I understand it. And so, you know, tie this back to that incident we talked about earlier when my controller quit, my financial controller quit, and I had to learn other aspects of the business. A lot of people haven't learned other aspects of the business. And so I think that was part, serendipitously, that was a blessing, like you said, Lincoln, that helped me be able to now do what I do, which is help medium-sized business owners or senior managers.
That's phenomenal because, you know, I know what you do from a coaching perspective. And I've, you know, also personally spoken to some people that have taken your coaching classes. And I know personally me, every time I talk to you, you're like a wealth of knowledge. You're like book. I mean, and we're going to get to some books, but you're like a library. You're like a walking library that just, you know, you take your knowledge and you share it with everybody. And I just want to acknowledge some people that are tuning in. Carly, hey Carly, how you doing? And Eric, thank you for joining. I always like to, you know, just in the middle a little bit. I, for you guys that are listening to the podcast, we're also doing a Facebook Live, and we have people that jump on all the time, and they, you know, just jump in on and off, you know, the broadcast and really just show us some love. So thank you guys for jumping on. I appreciate it. Share it, you know, share this podcast with other people. But Lon, you know, like I was mentioning, you are a wealth of knowledge when it comes to, every time I talk to you, I learn something new. I walk away with thought provoking, you know, okay, Lon said this is, you know, I want to implement this in my business, and you do that all the time. And you always share with me books, you share podcasts, you share quotes. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are some of the top, if these are business owners that are listening mm-hmm. to the podcast right now, mm-hmm. they are looking to market their business, they're looking to get their business out there in front of some people. What are some books that you can think of, you know, off the top of your head, or podcasts, on our podcast, besides listening to the Geek Speak podcast? You know, this should be the number one podcast that
after
you listen to.
After this one.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. What's the next? What are some other resources that business owners can consume?
Okay. I'll tell you, one of my favorite ones is the Masters of Scale podcast by Reid Hoffman. And Reid Hoffman is the founder of LinkedIn. But you may not also know that Reid Hoffman was one of the guys they call the PayPal Mafia. There was five or six people who were in the core group at PayPal when it started, and Elon Musk being one of them. But those, all of those guys went on to found multi-billion-dollar companies after they left PayPal, and so they're called the PayPal Mafia. But Reid Hoffman is also called the Oracle of Silicon Valley, because everybody comes to him and asks him for advice. And he was an early investor in bunches of incredibly successful companies, most notably, I guess, is Facebook. And he and Mark Zuckerberg are close friends. But he's close friends with all these people because he gets like he gets the CEOs, the founders of the most iconic companies, whether it's Spanx or Airbnb or whomever, to come on his podcast. It's called Masters of Scale. And so what they're talking about is scaling a company from zero, right? They're talking about when Sarah Blakely was living in a one-bedroom apartment in Atlanta selling fax machines.
Wow.
She goes from that,
yeah,
from that to being a self-made billionaire.
Great.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, how do you make that journey?
How do you do that? Yeah.
Okay, she tells about it on Masters of Scale. So and wow, because Reid Hoffman, who by the way has made over $3 billion himself investing in companies, because he is so successful, he gets access to these people. He's talking to them on a peer level, right?
Right.
It's not like an interviewer talking to them. I mean, and a matter of fact, they're looking up to him more.
Right.
So Masters of Scale is fantastic. I don't even know why Reid Hoffman does it. I mean, well, he certainly doesn't have to for financial reasons, but I guess he just likes it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Masters of Scale is fantastic. So books. You know, I'm into this organizational culture thing because I started realizing it's hugely important. You know, the culture of the organization makes the difference between success and failure. And there's a famous quote by Peter Drucker that says that culture eats strategy for breakfast.
That's a good one.
Yeah, isn't it?
That is good.
So we spend a lot of time on strategy. I mean, even when you're just thinking about a startup, the things you're thinking about are actually strategic things, right? First the product and then the strategy. And we don't think that much about culture until maybe third or fourth or after we've started. But the Peter Drucker quote, culture eats strategy for breakfast, means that if you don't have the culture right, no strategy is going to work.
Wow.
And the reason he says for breakfast is because the culture is going to make the strategy not work really quickly.
Right.
It's the first thing in the morning.
That is phenomenal.
So you hear this echoed. You hear that. The point of that quote echoed throughout all these people who've created successful companies. And so, by the way, that's what I'm looking for. I've read over 200 books on these kinds of things: behavioral economics, magic marketing, all that. And I'm always looking for these common threads.
Right.
What I want to find is something that not one person says. I don't care anything about one person's opinion. First, I read books that are based on research studies because mm-hmm. they're not based on one person's opinion. But then I want to find that the findings of this book match up with this book and this book and this book and this podcast and this podcast.
Right.
And those are the things that I consider to be worth helping people learn, because they're true just because they've reoccurred so many times. Okay, that culturate strategy for breakfast.
Right.
You hear some version of that in everybody. Everybody right. who's successful will tell you some version of that same story.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't even recommend a book.
Yeah, give us one
okay.
book. Give us one book.
Okay, one book is Powerful by Peggy McCord, and she was the chief people officer, so the HR person at Netflix for 14 years, from their beginning stages all the way till they were a multi-billion-dollar company. She was head of HR. And Powerful is about their Netflix company culture, organizational culture. And that's a new book. It just came out this year. I'd highly recommend it.
Okay. Now, all of the resources that you see Lon is talking about here, we're going to put those in the show notes. So we're going to put those in the show notes so you guys have access to those. We're going to put links to them so people can mm-hmm. go over there and get this. I'm urging you guys. I'm like, I am excited to hear, like, some results that you get from this podcast, because I think people that are listening to this and actually tune in and consume this podcast are going to do great things. Especially, you know, this is ending part of 2018 mm-hmm. and going into 2019, and you're thinking of starting a business or you're in a business and you're looking to grow your business. This, I think, and some of the resources that you've shared are going to give people some leaps. If if they listen and consume it. So one question, you know, in wrapping up the today, I wanted to ask you, in your coaching business, and I know you've talked about this before, and this is what a lot of people don't know about. So on a high level, can you talk a little bit about, you know, we talked about the motivation of people and how, you know, mm-hmm. you got to keep people motivated, and there's certain things and businesses, you know, employees are like one of the biggest, yeah. I mean, it runs your business, yeah. employees run your business. So talk a little bit about, and I've heard you say this before, intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. Yeah. Now, I know you could go really deep on that, and I think that and I'm excited to, you know, I always want to consume this information when you share it. So I wanted you to share, you know, a little bit of this with our audience in exactly what that is, because I think as business okay. owners and entrepreneurs, they can really take some value from that.
Yeah. So extrinsic motivation is what we generally call motivation. Extrinsic motivation comes from outside of you, external. Extrinsic means external. It comes from pay. It comes from salary. It comes from benefits. It comes from job descriptions. It comes from your boss. It comes from external. But intrinsic motivation comes from inside of you. It's your internal motivation. And so extrinsic motivation is, we often call that carrots and sticks, right? It's either the carrot, which is some kind of incentive to do something, probably financial, or the stick, which is some kind of disaster you want to avert, right? And so carrots and sticks is extrinsic or external motivation. The intrinsic, though, is that thing you really want to do. And, you know, we always hear this word passion, and we need to be passionate about what you do. And you can go all the way back to the famous Steve Jobs commencement address at Stanford University in 2005, where he says that you have to find something you love to do. Okay, and that's true, but it's not complete, because when we just follow our passion, there's this guy named, he's Ben Horowitz's partner, Mark Andreessen. Mark Andreessen, who is a huge venture capitalist, made billions of dollars doing venture capital investments, invested in all kinds of companies you've heard of, very much like Reid Hoffman. But he says that, you know, the problem with passion is you don't hear about all the people who follow their passion to being broken. Because the ones that are doing the commencement addresses and the podcasts and writing the books, they're successful.
Right, yeah.
They follow their passion, and they thought, hey, that's all you have to do, because that's what I did. No, because 99% of people who follow their passion end up broken. Okay, it doesn't mean that passion is not important.
Right.
It just means that you need more than that. So intrinsic motivation is about passion, but you need to think of it differently. Think about passion as curiosity. Think about passion as creativity. Think about passion as compulsion. That's right. An interesting one.
Yeah.
So what are you compelled to do? Like, what can you not stop yourself from doing? What do you think about at night? What do you work on the weekends when you're not even getting paid? Instead of getting paid, you pay to do it.
Right.
That's what you're compelled to do, that's your intrinsic motivation. What you're curious about is your intrinsic motivation. What you want to creatively express in the world is your intrinsic motivation, right? Okay, so when you're motivated by that, nothing will stop you. You will work on that to the exclusion of everything else, even money, right? But the good news is, if you follow your intrinsic motivation, and then you have to couple it with mastery, which takes years and years of deliberate practice, and this thing called impact. So what can you do that'll make a positive impact on other people?
Right.
So if you take that, that passion, that curiosity, that creativity, and you align that with something you can be masterfully great at, right? And then you align that with something that'll make a positive impact on people. You can think about it as three overlapping circles. That's what will make you successful. So that's where extrinsic motivation will never get you to super success. Extrinsic motivation will really just get you to an average, right? Just to doing a job and, you know, you can pay your bills. Intrinsic motivation is what will get you success, because that will allow you to drive through the obstacles. And there's always obstacles.
Oh, yeah.
So if you can't drive through them, then you're going to end up being just average. So you have to find that thing that intrinsically motivates you, but make sure that it's also something you can be, not are, but can be masterfully great at, and something that makes a positive impact on lots of people. Because the positive impact's what people are going to pay you for.
That's right. And you know what? I'm glad you said that, because, you know, there was a five-year period. There was a five-year period where, you know, I started reading a lot of books. You know, I started really, focusing on, and I didn't even know it was like intrinsic motivation, but this was something I know I had goals and things that I wanted to do. And, you know, I focused so much on what made me happy and like you said, what I would do for free. And marketing is what I would, I mean, I love the challenge of it. I love helping people. Mm-hmm. And I just love the fact that, you know, I love learning, and no matter what I do, I just kept feeding myself. Mm-hmm. And it really feels like it's not even a job. You know, I feel like I'm cheating.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I feel like I'm cheating.
Yeah. I can't believe they pay me to do this.
Yes.
Yeah.
They literally pay me to do something that I would do for free.
And when you can get to that, you've aligned your intrinsic motivation with something you can be great at, with something that makes an impact. Right. Yes, absolutely.
So I didn't even know I was doing that.
You were doing that.
So thank you, Lon. I appreciate that. So in wrapping up, how can people get in contact with you? You know, if they want to reach out to you and say, hey, look, I'm in a business, you know, mm-hmm. in the area that you're looking to work with businesses in. And, you know, they're like, I need some coaching. I need some executive coaching. How can they get in contact with
you? So there's two quick and easy ways. One is lon@langston.net. Just email me, lon@langston.net, LENGSTON, lon@langston.net.
Yep.
And the other one is connect with me on LinkedIn. Right, connect with me on LinkedIn, and then send me a private message on LinkedIn, because I love LinkedIn, and I'm there a lot. I'm looking at content a lot. I'm posting content a lot. So connect with me there.
Awesome, Lon. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure
for you being on podcast today. I mean, like I said, I learn something every single time we're on. We get to talk, and thank you for sharing what you share with our audience, because I know this is going to go a long way.
I want to endorse Lincoln Parks, because he's a great guy who's helped me a lot too, really.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Lon. All right, guys. So you heard it here first. This is Lon Langston. Go and connect with him on LinkedIn. He will read your message on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a real guy. You know, he responds. Okay. There you go. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week on Geek Speak. Take care. See ya.